The Fan on Demand.
Hey there, this is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I am Ben Ennis, joined by Dan Robson, Arden's Welling on this Saturday morning. Good Saturday to you. Lots to talk about today. We'll get to the Blue Jays, Major League Baseball's non-waiver trade deadline, which was kind of crazy. Insane. Unless you remember the Toronto Blue Jays. Well, you know what? It was insane for the Toronto Blue Jays, but for different reasons. PK Subban, the arbitration hearing also over. We'll get to that in our second hour. Rogers Cup getting ready to crank up on Monday. And if you haven't seen it yet, Paul George, yikes, scary stuff. If you haven't seen the video, I don't, it's up to you if you want to see it.
I haven't seen it. What happened? Let's talk about this.
It's not good, Arden. It was ugly.
Man, arm, leg? What are we looking at here?
Leg. Yeah. One of those moments.
Yeah. Oh, was it like the NCAA kid?
Yeah, it was like Kevin Ware.
Kevin Ware?
Kevin Ware-esque with the bone almost sticking out as well. So yeah, we'll describe it for you on radio, which is probably a better way to go than you actually looking up the video. But yeah, joined by Dan Robson, Arden Zwelling from Sportsnet Magazine. Let's start with the Blue Jays, who see their 6-game winning streak come to an end yesterday in Houston. And there were people on Twitter, you got to win these games against the Astros. Well, you know, it's Major League Baseball. And even the Houston Astros are going to win 60-some-odd times. So they do win yesterday. Offense not doing much for the Blue Jays in a 3-1 loss. Series continues today and wraps up on Sunday. But the news of the week for the Blue Jays is standing pat at the non-waiver trade deadline. There were moves to be had, especially in the American League East, both the Yankees and the Orioles, and really the Red Sox too, making some moves. Red Sox know they're out of it for this year, but doing a pretty good job of improving themselves for next year. But the Blue Jays stand pat. Jose Bautista and Casey Jansen, pretty vocal that they thought maybe something should have been done to improve this team because they're well within striking distance in both the American League East and currently holding down that second wild card spot. But here they are. They didn't do anything. They won that first game but lost the second. Does it change anything for this team? Does it change your outlook on the Blue Jays going forward, Dan?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think you can understand the frustration in the clubhouse voiced by Bautista and Jansen and by some fans saying, seeing that everybody else in the AL East is tuning up. You know, their biggest rivals are getting better, and the Jays look like they're staying the same. I mean, I don't think that there's something to be said about sitting put when you're, you know, sitting still when you're doing quite well and things are going in your favor. But I can understand the frustration. And I mean, I think that, you know, it's not surprising that it came out.
It's kind of a moving target, isn't it? When you look at like Jays fans who came into this year just saying like, oh, we just want to be playing meaningful games late in the season. You know, you are. You have that. We just want to be in a good spot late in the season. You are. You're in a playoff spot with a lead.
Starting on Tuesday, I mean, that's the biggest series in this city in how many years against the Orioles when they start a 3-game set against Baltimore.
So you have that. You have the thing that you want. And then now it's like, oh, well, now you have to add. You know, now we have to be 10 games up on the division. Now we have to be that. It's like you're moving the target.
You can't be satisfied. You got to be complaining all the time.
Right, right. And it is interesting, though. There were so many warm and fuzzy feelings surrounding the Blue Jays after the All-Star break. They win first 4 series. They go into Yankee Stadium, win their first game at Yankee Stadium since 2012, then win their first series at Yankee Stadium since 2012, and then they sweep the Red Sox yet again, miss John Lester, that was nice, and then they win first game of that Astros series, but it was an interesting time for Jose Bautista and Casey Jansen to come out and say what they did, because, like I said, it kind of changed the narrative just a little bit with this Blue Jays team coming out with those comments.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm still trying to grapple with exactly what it means. I mean, it's surprising. It was like right away, sort of Bautista comes out and there's a you know, reporters are there and he's sort of, you know, criticizing the team right away. And I mean, I don't know if this is something that the team sort of brings them together in some sort of way and say, okay, we're going to get through this, or it just actually just shows cracks in the core of what they have. And I mean, that's the troubling part, because I think I lean more towards that side.
I always think about motivations and what somebody's motivation is for doing something, right? Yeah. And like, so like, they understand how it works. They understand when the press are in the clubhouse. They understand how to whisper things to certain guys' ears, how to get stuff. out there. And everybody in baseball does that. GMs, managers, players, everybody does that. You play this game because, I mean, reporters, we're just pawns, really.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. So
maybe you were. Really.
So I'm always curious when something like that happens. It's clearly so scripted and clearly something that's like, you know, been planned.
What do you think? I mean, what's the message then?
I guess it's that there was not enough resources or not enough effort was made to add to this team that has holes. I don't know if the holes are glaring, and certainly they get closed up a whole lot better when Edwin Encarnacion, Brett Laurie returned, and Laurie was on a rehab assignment, started it yesterday, and could be back next week at some point. But the bullpen still needs some help, and the way Drew Hutchison's pitched, maybe there's another starter that is required. Are there enough holes here, Arden, where, you know, there were deals to be had that could have really improved this team? Or was it just, I mean, they weren't going to be in on David Price or John Lester, so that's another story. But were there moves to be made that weren't made for this Blue Jays team?
Well, what you just said, but with the starting pitching depth, like, that's one of the scariest things on this team.
Who's the next guy in if somebody goes down or they decide to move Drew Hutchison out of the rotation? Is it Sean Nolan? I mean, do they? Who is it? Todd Redmond?
Yeah, it would have been Liam Hendricks, I guess. He's gone, right? And he wasn't a very good pitcher in that ballpark anyway, at the Rogers Center, where he was getting crushed, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's one of the scariest things. He brought up Drew Hutchison, who, you know, has had issues throughout the year with velocity and with his recuperation between starts. Marcus Stroman's never thrown this many innings in his life. And that's my boy, but like he's never thrown this many innings in his life, so you don't know. There's a big unknown here.
In terms of starting pitchers out there, though, who would you have gone after at the deadline that wasn't Price or Lester?
Yeah, Malone?
Ben's gonna disagree with me. I think Tommy Malone would have been all right. You could bring him in. You could option him to AAA. He's got options, and you got him for Sam Fold, right?
Yeah.
Who was somebody that was DFA'd a few weeks ago. You could have had him for not much, and you option him to AAA. You see what he's got. I don't think it hurts to do. It doesn't hurt to just find out unless you already know, unless they've scouted him so much and they've seen his medicals enough that they're saying, all right, we don't want to touch that.
Yeah. And the one thing that I would caution about Tommy Malone, and the numbers have been good in Oakland in a huge, huge ballpark and one that doesn't allow that many home runs. It's difficult to give up 25 home runs in that ballpark. He did last year. So imagine what that number is at Rogers Center.
Absolutely, but I think you bring him in just as depth, right? I mean, you're not bringing him in to start right now. You're bringing him in to option him down and just have him just in cases. Have a bit of a safety net. Because what is your safety net now for starting pitching
depth?
Well,
that's the thing. I mean,
Sean Nolan.
Yeah, it's Sean Nolan or Brad Mills. We've seen Brad Mills already once this year. But I just wonder, with Malone specifically, he was already a malcontent in Oakland being sent to AAA because their starting pitching depth is ridiculous. So if you bring him to Toronto and he's a malcontent again for a team that doesn't nearly have the starting pitching depth that the Oakland A's do, and still they're going to send him to AAA to be that sixth starter, I wonder if that would have necessarily worked. But that's not a guy that was talked about a whole bunch with this team at the deadline, really.
No, but there's a hole there. I mean, Espiel Rogers is gone now.
Yeah.
He's gone to New York, and that would have been another guy who could have given you some starts.
Yankees are just throwing whatever they can at the wall and hoping that something sticks. I mean, they were maybe the most active team outside of the Red Sox in the American League East, but they did the most in trying to improve their team.
Without giving up too much. Either.
No, they didn't. They gave up maybe one prospect, but they've added pieces. And I tweeted this on Thursday after the non-waiver trade deadline. It's not that the Yankees won the World Series with their moves. They still didn't address their biggest problems, which is in the starting rotation. And how can they address it? But you look at those moves, and maybe and Martin Prado is the one guy that maybe the Blue Jays could have been helped by his services. And I wonder if that does come down to money.
It's such a Yankees thing, though, to bring in guys like Steven Drew and Martin Prado and get a lot out of them. When you look at like what they got out of Lyle Overbay and Vernon Wells and like these scrap heap guys, it's such a Yankees thing to bring in those guys and have them go off.
Yeah, I'm sure if Brad Mills was available, he'd go to the Yankees and like win a Cy Young Award. But
watch Esmeel's ERA will be like 1.2 over the next.
Oh, yeah. He's going to go right into the rotation and be spectacular. But isn't that kind of what Casey Jansen and Jose Bautista are saying? And they're looking at the Yankees and what they did and saying, why couldn't we have done that?
Well, I mean, that's a part of clearly a part of the frustration. It's, you know, with teams go out that want to win and make moves. They make moves that make their team better when it counts. They're not saying that this team isn't great and they don't like the guys they're with, but you need that extra punch. Sometimes you need to go out there and spend a little cash and get a guy that's going to take you on this pennant race. And I mean, I think that that's definitely what they're saying. And it's frustrating to see that go to the Yankees and a team like the Yankees that, you know, does that all the time. It's sort of frustrating to sit back and say, well, okay, we're just going to go with what we've got.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, I'm Ben Ennis alongside Dan Robson and Arden Zwelling. That being said, Blue Jays, you know, it was funny. I had Dave Cameron from Fangraphs on. I was filling in for Jeff Belair last couple days, and I had him on Friday, and he talked about Fangraphs doing an evaluation after the trade deadline, who increased their chances of making the playoffs the most with the moves they made at the trade deadline. They analyzed the rosters, the remaining schedule. Blue Jays improved their chances the second most in Major League Baseball just by winning a game, and the Orioles losing. Their chances went up 3% on Thursday.
And from who left the division, too, right?
Right.
I mean, from John Lester leaving the division, David Price leaving the division. That helps.
I would put the Blue Jays rotation right up there with the Orioles. I mean, the Orioles rotation's not going to blow you away. Are they still maybe the second for maybe the best team in the American League East, even after Thursday?
The Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah.
I think, well, I mean, the Baltimore Orioles just have guys just putting up numbers. I mean, and
Adam
Jones
is on fire.
Right. Nelson Cruz, I mean, that's one of the best pickups of the offseason right there.
He's going to get paid, you would think, next season.
But like what they've gotten for him and what they're paying him, I mean, it's incredible. So I'd say Baltimore's probably better than Toronto right now, but you can make a good case that they're the second best team in the division.
Yeah, they've been outstanding of late. It's sort of frustrating to be watching the Jays and knowing they're doing well and then watching Baltimore just not giving them an inch. They're just going to keep on going. I don't know, is that going to level out though? I'm not sure if they're going to end up coming down to earth.
I think they might just a little bit because I don't think they're nearly as good as they're playing. I think they caught the Angels at the right time in Anaheim, and maybe the Blue Jays will catch them at the right time on Tuesday because they'll have played a whole bunch. They got a makeup game on Monday against the Washington Nationals, and then they come here for three games, and then it's the Detroit Tigers in for three games as well. But, they're just – you look at the standings, they're not – Blue Jays are on fire. They're not gaining any ground.
This upcoming week is going to be just incredible, and it's huge just to see how important the swing is going to be.
They're up in the wild card, though. I mean, two or three games up. I mean, the Yankees have been fading a bit. Seattle's fading because the Orioles are beating Seattle right now. I mean, you're up in the wild card. That's a playoff spot.
Right.
That's a good thing.
I know.
It's not the best thing.
That's a good thing. People are so unhappy about it. It's a good thing.
And you keep talking about the change in goalpost. Isn't that? I mean, that's a perfect example, right? Oh, we just want meaningful baseball. Oh, we just want a playoff game. Well, imagine the Blue Jays make that one game playoff. They get smoked 8-0 by the Angels or something.
You still
Gonna, I mean, is that going to feel satisfying? I guess it will, but.
First playoff baseball in Toronto in more than 20 years. You still had that. It's the ride that's satisfying, right? It's the ups and downs, and it's the going through everything.
It's complaining about it, too. That's part of it as well.
Oh, that's part of sports.
Yeah.
And we'll get into some of the other moves as well around Major League Baseball before the top of the hour. But everybody's talking about, well, what's the point of even making the playoffs? You're going to get your claw cleaned by Oakland or Detroit. I don't know if you've watched Major League Baseball playoffs the last, 100 years. Yeah. You just need a lottery ticket. Get into the lottery. Anyone can win.
It's crapshoot.
It's in baseball, teams get hot for a week. A 7-game series is nothing. One game in baseball, I mean, the Astros win 60 of these things. So, yeah, absolutely. If the Blue Jays can get in, that would be big for them. But
crazy things happen. Clayton Kershaw got rocked in the playoffs last year.
That's right.
He got crushed, and this is the best pitcher on the planet.
Yeah.
Crazy things happen in the playoffs. Just get in.
Yeah, the immortal Clayton Kershaw. Drew Hutchison, we touched on him and his performances recently. Two starts ago, he was pretty good at Yankee Stadium. His last outing, not so good in Houston against the Astros. And he's going past, you know, barriers that he's never been before. He's just 2 years removed from Tommy John. I wonder if the Blue Jays aren't really looking at him pretty intently, and especially with the off day coming on Monday. He's supposed to start the second game of that Orioles series. I wonder if they back him off there a little bit. And if they do skip him for a start, is it possible that they look at moving him out of the rotation if they realize, well, you know, this was you had some nice moments this year, Drew, but for your long-term health and considering where you are as far as your return from Tommy John, maybe it's a good idea to just shut you down for the season, which would be a huge loss to this rotation.
Well, I was going
to
say, like, what do you do? As you're talking about earlier, this rotation, who else is going to slip into that role?
That's a problem.
That's a huge problem, especially when you've got a guy. I mean, he had a great start, like you're saying, though. It would be probably smart to say, okay, let's take it easy. But we're in a pennant race. This is you can't just shut it. You need a rotation that's going to be, everybody's going to go out there and you'll be confident in them. And they just don't have that. And that's the biggest weakness.
You can get... Right now. sorry to cut you off. You can get creative right now with the and in how you manage his time in between starts, and you can take away a bullpen session, right? You can do stuff like that. You can give him an extra day. They've got off days coming up. The Blue Jays have played a lot of games so far. Blue Jays have played more games than a lot of other teams have. So there are off days coming up. So you can kind of get creative with how you manage your rotation. You got a guy like R.A. Dickey who will throw 250 innings, no problem. Yeah. So you can just keep him going on that 5 day cycle. And when you have that off day, you can use it for a guy like Drew Hutchison, for a guy like Marcus Stroman, for a guy like whoever, if Jay Happ, you know, whoever you want to get some time off. And then what the guy does in between starts, you can kind of dial it back a bit. Because like right now, in a bullpen session in between a start, you're not going to go out and crush it. You know, you're just going to go and kind of get your work in, and you kind of dial it back. So you can get creative with where they are right now.
Are you worried about Stroman at all, like getting him rest? Or is he, because you
know, I'm not worried about him.
I would never worry about the Messiah, Marcus Stroman.
His conditioning is off the charts. Yeah. I did a big Stroman story for the magazine. His conditioning is ridiculous. This is a guy who's very, very meticulous.
His dad is jacked up. I'm sure that's where he got that fitness regimen from. I mean, growing
up. Perhaps. His dad does a lot of biceps curls, to be honest. I mean, Stroman, with his stretching and with like stuff like that, like the little things that really help you like with longevity and preserving your season, he's on point with all that stuff. Takes really, really good care of his body because he's had to, because he's an undersized guy. Yeah. So he doesn't have that like natural lanky athleticism. Like he has to really like work on his flexibility, and he has to really work on his elbow and his knees and his back and all that stuff. And he's a guy who puts in the work. You get to the Rogers Center early on a day after his starts, you'll see him out there running stairs. You'll see him running sprints. You'll see him doing stretches. He's out there.
He's not eating chicken hot dogs? Not like Colby Rasmus?
No, he's not in the cab stuck in traffic on his way to the park.
Well, I mean, that brings up an interesting discussion point, because his name, along with Aaron Sanchez, those were the guys Blue Jays would have to have traded away for one of those big pieces. They hold on to both of them. Stroman, I mean, what is the upgrade on Stroman? Even a David Price or John Lester, the way he's pitched in his 10 starts this season. Is it, okay, so maybe David Price gives up zero runs instead of the one run over seven innings that Marcus Stroman gives up. Now you got Marcus Stroman for the next 6 years. Yeah. I mean, that's another consideration you need to make when you're evaluating the Blue Jays after the deadline.
The only concern that you have is just the pessimism that always creeps into your mind and saying he's been incredible. He's been like a stud. He's the Jays ace now.
Yeah.
He's also really, really young and doing this for the first time. Like, what happens, as the season goes on and if they make the playoffs? I mean, I just don't know. Is there something to be concerned about relying on, you know, a kid to be your ace?
He's got great makeup for his age, and I think that's why the Jays would have confidence in him if he faced some adversity and he faced a bit of a blip, as he did earlier this year.
Yeah,
I
mean, his first start at Yankee Stadium got lit up a little bit.
Right, got crushed by the Angels. I mean, he's faced adversity and bounced back from it because his makeup is really good. Mentally, he's a very, very strong kid, and they believe the same thing about Aaron Sanchez. I think that's why those guys didn't get moved, is because they, you know, it's so rare that a prospect even works out, and these two have worked out.
Yeah.
And they, right, physically and mentally, they also have that ability to come back from adversity.
I mean, how many Matt Laporta's and Justin Smokes. I mean,
where's Travis Snyder? You know, like for years, Travis Snyder was the Messiah. Like he was the guy who was going to save this team, and now he's in Pittsburgh.
And Sanchez, everything I heard about Sanchez was, oh, he's got control issues. He's got to work out getting the ball over the plate in the strike zone. It just hasn't worked out for him in the minor leagues. The numbers don't jump off the page. You look at his AAA, AA numbers. I mean, that doesn't look like a world beater in the minor leagues. But everything you've seen in the major leagues, he hasn't walked a guy yet, I don't think. And maybe that's just a byproduct of coming out of the bullpen instead of starting, where he can go 100% and not have to pace himself. But I've been very pleasantly surprised by what I've seen out of Aaron Sanchez.
I can't wait to see him start. I can't wait to see when he introduces more pitches into the repertoire and starts having to face some more interesting situations. Because like right now, like you said, he's coming out of the bullpen. He can just go 98 curve. 97 curve, right?
Yeah.
But I want to see him like actually, you know, play cat and mouse with pitchers. Like I want to see some actual battles. That'll be cool.
Yeah, and you mentioned the curve. I mean, the curve is something I didn't expect it to be as good as it is, and with so much depth and 98, right? I mean, he did give up a run. Remember that? It was a 98 mile an hour two-seam fastball on the outside black to Carlos Beltran.
Right?
Yeah.
He's the only guy that could get to that, too. Like, that pitch was perfect with sink, with tail on it.
Yep.
Perfect. And, like, Beltran's a Hall of Famer. He gets to that.
Absolutely. And that's the only blemish on his resume. And, you know, he's coming out of the bullpen, ends up with the win, his first career win, despite giving up the lead in that game. But that's one of the guys you would have had to give up if you're looking at And I don't even know if that's enough to get David Price or John Lester. You're looking, I mean, Shai Davidi had a pretty good story on Sportsnet.ca comparing the returns on both of those deals, John Lester and David Price, and what the Blue Jays equivalents were. And you're talking about guys like Jose Bautista, Brett Laurie, and an Aaron Sanchez. Yeah. I mean, that's how is that adding to your team? If you're subtracting huge pieces like that, it doesn't make sense for this team. So I don't think, and I don't know if Jose Bautista and Casey Jansen are upset about those deals not being made. I think it's the smaller type deals.
Well, the Blue Jays are in a spot right now where their high upside prospect talent is far away. Like their lottery tickets, their guys in single A and
Roberto
high A,
right? Osuna.
Right? You don't know what's going to happen. They don't have any of those like blue chip, like Aaron Sanchez, Marcus Stroman guys. Like, and if they had an excess of that, they could have dealt from that, but
they
don't.
They're all pitching prospects too, right? They don't have any position player prospects. Really.
Dalton Pompey. I mean,
And some people, well, maybe his upside's a fourth outfielder. Right. Nobody really knows, but
right. DJ Davis. Like these are guys that like you're still developing and building. These are guys in very low levels of the minor leagues. So there's not that they're not good prospects, but they're not as sure things as what you would need to trade for your John Lesters and David Prices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, I feel like optics are a big part of this. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Ben Ennis, Dan Robson, Arden Zwelling, Blue Jays continuing their series against the Astros tonight on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan, 710 first pitch, R.A. Dickey against Oberholzer. But the Blue Jays didn't make a deal on Thursday, like on Thursday. And that's, I mean, the optics change, right? They did make a deal for a guy who's actually had an impact, couple of deals. They traded Liam Hendricks and Eric Kratz, a couple of guys who were in AAA, for a guy in Danny Valencia who hits lefties.
Yeah.
It was a need. Who can play first base all of a sudden, didn't really realize. Actually did a pretty good job playing first base, a couple of picks already. Plays third base against righties. There's some question marks there. Certainly I've seen him wave at a couple breaking balls in the dirt. And they got a guy in Nolan Reimold for nothing. Just picked him up. A guy who I think is, if he's healthy, it's a no-brainer that he will contribute because he's done it. The big question mark is health. So if this happened, if Alex Anthopoulos made those two moves on Thursday, isn't it a different tune being sung by Jose Bautista and Casey Jansen?
Yeah, I mean, perhaps. I mean, I think they were looking at guys like Prado and stuff and sort of seeing the guys out there and seeing their rivals get better, and that's frustrating. But yeah, you look around at what they needed, and they did make some deals to get those. And I mean, I think they've tuned up, and we've got guys coming back. So I mean, we're not in a situation where this looks bad going forward. It doesn't look as good as we dreamed it might.
Yeah,
they're not sexy moves. Is the problem, I think, for fans? Is they're not.
You don't
like,
think Nolan Reimold sexy? I'm gonna tell him. I'm gonna tell him you said that.
They're not headline grabbing moves, right? And nobody's losing their mind over Danny Valencia, right? But like they are moves that help, and they're moves that give John Gibbons options, which is the most important thing, I think. Valencia like opens up a lot of things for you for what you could do with Juan Francisco. Like it affects the rest of your lineup,
right? And you know. And I liked the kind of this team's look when they were down to a six-man bullpen. I know you can't do it. It's Major League Baseball.
Oh, I wish they kept that.
And nobody does six-man bullpens anymore. But to have that kind of flexibility at the end of a game, and yes, I mean, Munenori Kawasaki is not an all-time great baseball player. But if you're only playing him against righties, and then that opens up a spot late in a game to get a righty bat in there against situational lefties, maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. We see the Oakland A's do that all the time. They have so many platoons. Around that diamond.
Yeah. I mean, when Brett Laurie went down, it created a lot of problems with where you play guys and how you set up your roster and your lineup. Because Brett Laurie's so versatile, you could put him at second, you could put him at third, whatever. He plays the shift so well. I mean, it created a bit of a problem for the options that John Gibbons has. And now having Reimold, having Valencia, he's able to better, set up his team for success.
Who do you think they go after in the waiver wire? And what do they need to pick up when they go?
Well, that's another
month?
Thing. Everybody thinks it's all done. I think there's going to be some huge, huge names being moved here in August. The only problem is Blue Jays are kind of high up in the standings and down the pecking order when it comes to teams getting a first crack at guys that are put on recallable waivers. It's going to be difficult for guys to get any starting pitcher to get past the New York Yankees.
Sure.
Well, that's the issue, is that the Yankees are chasing the Jays is the problem. And the Yankees can block anything because they don't mind taking on payroll, right? Like Seattle, you're not that worried about because they can't take on that
you
much payroll.
You think Cole Hamels is getting to the Blue Jays? There's no chance.
No, not at all. Yeah. But I think they'll get a reliever. I wouldn't be surprised if they went out and got a reliever on the waiver wire if there's, a serviceable situational guy that you can rely on.
I have no doubt, I think they absolutely have to.
Yeah, it really does seem like that. I mean, it was helped a lot by adding Aaron Sanchez in there, and nobody really expected him to all of a sudden maybe be your second, third most reliable reliever. I mean, you got to throw Todd Redmond in there as well, who's having an unbelievable season. And kind of the big reason the Blue Jays won that first game of that Astros series coming in after a pretty lackluster start there and really keeping the Blue Jays in it within striking distance at two runs back. And they came back and win it 6-5 on Nolan Reimold's second home run. But the bullpen as a whole has shown it's got some weaknesses. And I know that Aaron Loop has been good for the most part this season, had a bit of a rough go of it yesterday. But if you just add another arm there, I mean, that just takes the pressure off everybody and moves everybody down just a little bit. And you've got, if you can get an elite-level arm to take a little pressure off Casey Jansen, if he goes down, because we know he's got a history of shoulder problems, but I mean, he's been healthy for the most part this season, to throw another arm into the mix would be a big addition for this team.
You might get some bullpen help from in-house as well. Steve Delabar, Sergio Santos, if those guys can figure it out. Yeah. I know they haven't had good results this year, but these are guys who have had good major league careers, who have been very, very good. Maybe they're just facing a bit of a blip right now. If they can kind of right the ship, I mean, that's huge. Bullpen help from in-house.
We're going to get to the big moves in Major League Baseball after 10:30 here. 10:35, we're going to come back and talk about that. Before we take the break, next week, mention the three-game series against the Baltimore Orioles. And it's been so long since you've had a series of this magnitude for the Blue Jays. They could be, conceivably, in first place in the American League East by the time that series rolls along. And likely, I mean, they're not going to be any further back than 2.5 games, which they are right now. They were 1.5 game back yesterday. But if this series is going to have meaning no matter what. We saw the excitement that can envelop this city when a sports team is doing well. We saw the Raptors. They were in the first round of the playoffs. I know they made it to a game 7. They had a surprising season. Maple Leafs, every time they make the playoffs, once every 20 years, whatever. Excitement in this city. Are we going to see that kind of excitement? I know it's just one series and there's still a long way to go, but Tuesday is kind of the biggest moment for this franchise. And geez, I don't know how long, Dan.
I don't know. I mean, I'd be curious actually to see if it's what the ticket sales are like in that. I mean, yes, this is exciting. Last year,
shouldn't
sucked.
They sell them out? All three games?
They should. But I mean, I think I think now, you know, we're past the deadline. We're moving into August. I think this is when things really start to pick up. And as long as they stay within that wild card race, they stay within first place, things are going to completely pick up. And you are going to see that kind of hype and stuff that comes back. The kind of excitement that we were seeing last year right before the season started. And everyone was all of a sudden like, oh, we have a baseball team again. We're really excited about this. Now I think you're going to see it build up. And it's going to be fun. And that's the thing. Right now is a lot of fun. We're complaining about, you know, these blockbuster things not happening. But this is a good team that's giving us, a great ride right now.
It goes back to what we were saying earlier about the moving goalposts, right? Yep. Like, there's a lot of Blue Jays fans are a different breed, man. Like, you look at the Raptors fans who really got behind their team that was like a team that like nobody really expected to be very good and then went to the playoffs. That's the same thing as the Jays. Nobody coming into this year said the Jays were going to be good, and now they are, and they're in the playoffs, and there's still cynicism.
And the Raptors, that was just. It was so exciting just to see how excited the fans were for that. I was talking about it when I was just on the road in Cleveland before, and they were talking about, and they're obviously very excited because LeBron James is coming back and they're crazy sports fans and everything's huge, but they were talking about Toronto. The people were talking about how excited Toronto was. They were seeing it on highlight shows there, and that was really interesting, and I would love to see that happen with it was getting to a pennant race.
It's the same ingredients. It's a team that's in the playoffs. It's a team with exciting players. I mean, Brett Laurie is your Kyle Lowry, right? Like, that's your dude who's like an excitable guy who can like inspire some passion, right? Like, it's the same ingredients, but the Blue Jays fans just don't seem to respond to it the way the Raptors fans did.
I think you're gonna get Blue Jays fans who aren't the hardcore diehard Blue Jay fans that are following all the stats and everything. You're gonna get the hype and the Toronto all of a sudden. People are gonna come out and say, "Wow, something's happening." That I'm gonna start paying attention, and that's what you're gonna get. You're gonna get the extra fans that are coming out and filling the ballpark, and it's gonna be really, really fun. And not to always go back to 92 and 93, but I hope. I mean, I don't think it's gonna be just as crazy as that, but I hope we start seeing that kind of hype and the excitement about this again.
Yeah, if only it was just a little easier to get down there from where I live in Oakville. It is not easy. And man, the GO train stinks.
It's mayhem down there. It's a war zone.
It's a disaster.
You came down this morning from Oakville?
Yeah, I did. I come down every morning. That's where I live, Dan.
We were on air.
Unless I can crash at your place.
Anytime. You were on air till like 2 o'clock last night, don't
worry. I know. But I should have slept here.
Working hard.
We were all doing things till 2 o'clock last night, weren't we?
So yeah. All right. Like I said, I need to write a story for Sportsnet.ca or maybe the magazine, and I get all my bases covered for Sportsnet this morning. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis, Dan Robson, Arden Zwelling around the table. Coming up at 10:38, Major League Baseball non-waiver trade deadline, John Lester and David Price, the huge names moved at the deadline. One surprising, one maybe not so much, but changing the outlook of the American League headed towards the playoffs. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Ben Nicholson-Smith.
What if the A's had passed on Moneyball? What if Michael Lewis had never written the book? And what if Brad Pitt hadn't starred in the movie? Would baseball analytics still have taken off? Back in 1984, when Michael Lewis was still studying economics, Billy Beane was a top outfield prospect with the Mets, and Bill James was writing his baseball abstracts, Pat Gillick was working closely with Gord Ashe, then the Blue Jays administrator of player personnel. Though he was no number cruncher, Gillick's critical thinking helped lead the Jays to 5 division titles, 4 of which were won with a red-haired, glasses-wearing platoon third baseman named Rance, who was also an on-base machine.
Pat was a sabermetrician and an analytics-type person without knowing it was. It was all just naturally in his mind.
So yes, sabermetrics would have taken off because they were already in use, even if the people using them didn't know it. Get this story and 24 more barroom debates about sports in the 21st century in the What If issue.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet Magazine, available on newsstands now, and for your tablet and mobile phone on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand. Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Ennis along with Dan Robson. Arden Zwelling on a Saturday for you. Major League Baseball's non-waiver trade deadline went down 4 o'clock Thursday afternoon. I mean, it's not usually a big deal. Usually non-waiver trade deadline passes. First of all, I hate that we have to keep calling it the non-waiver trade deadline. It's too long. There needs to be
We need some catchier branding for that, I think. Yeah.
Super spectacular Tostitos. non-waiver trade deadline, but it passes, and usually it's just, you know, that doesn't go unnoticed. But there's not, I mean, the face of some of the elite teams in baseball does not change, and it changed probably on two fronts in both Oakland and Detroit as David Price goes to the Tigers and John Lester goes to the Oakland A's. I mean, we get hyped up in this building a lot for National Hockey League's trade deadline. I mean, we start at whatever 5:30 in the morning, whatever, and go all the way to the nighttime. And sometimes it lives up to expectations, sometimes not. But Major League Baseball, we don't see big deals like this. It was pretty cool to see what went down on Thursday.
Yeah, it was super. It was exciting. You're sort of like, oh my goodness, I can't believe, you know, the A's. Look at the A's now. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
They're look incredible.
Poor Ben Nicholson-Smith just
I know he's
crushed.
Busy. Give him a shout out. He worked really, really
shout
hard.
Shout out to
I saw him. I had him on. I was filling in for Jeff Blair on Thursday too, and we had him on the radio. I think we had him in at 9 o'clock, and then I saw him later as I was leaving, and he just looked
shell shocked.
Oh, yeah. I was at work till like 8 that night working something, and he was still like he left just before me. He was there all day. And so yeah, good for Ben. We appreciate that.
Yeah, it was. And it was a great day to actually be on the radio. I feel bad, actually, more for the Oakland beat guys because that trade went down at like 9:30 Eastern, which is 6:30 Pacific. Mm-hmm. So they probably woke up to their phones exploding and then had to react pretty quickly. But, all right, maybe that's a good place to start. Do you have something to say?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting trade. I mean, you're moving the Cespedes. I was like, holy cow, I can't believe they got rid of it. What is Billy Beane thinking? Obviously, Billy Beane's thinking a lot, but it was a shocking kind of move. The more you thought about it, like, wow, this really makes a lot of sense on different levels for both teams.
You're seeing teams like double down on pitching a lot right now. And I think that's in response to a lot of the injuries that we've seen this year. Like a lot of good pitchers have gone down and a lot of arms that were once reliable have not, like Matt Cain's having elbow surgery, right?
Right.
That's one of the more reliable guys over the major. You know, so I think that that's in response to that you just need that much depth of really quality starters if you have hopes of going into the playoffs, because you don't know what's going to happen. Jose Fernandez, like, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And if you lose your key guy and there's no one to give you good innings after that, you're screwed.
Well, so, I mean, that opens a couple of different angles for me. I mean, the one is, yes, you can never have too much starting pitching because it can you think you have depth and all of a sudden you don't. Also, kind of makes me think that maybe the Red Sox did the right thing by not giving John Lester what he's going to get on the open market. Now, it definitely opens up a big hole that the Red Sox have to fill this offseason with whoever. And I guess it's still a possibility that they re-sign John Lester. But for a guy who's 30 years old, to give him whatever, $20-plus million a year for 6 years, is that likely to work out? How many times does that work out? Do you think that the Tigers really think that's going to work out with Justin Verlander, who is already starting to regress a little bit?
I mean, that's what you got to do if you want to play ball in the majors right now, because if you don't give him that money, somebody else will. And especially a guy like Justin Verlander, who has pitched his entire career in a Tigers uniform, who has sold a lot of jerseys for you, who has been a cornerstone of that franchise. I mean, you make money off them in other ways, right? You make money off ticket sales, off jerseys, off bobblehead nights, off stuff like this, right? I mean, and they kind of become ambassadors for your franchise. But if they don't give him that money, maybe the Yankees do. And maybe you look like a fool for letting this guy get away.
I think that's a legitimate possibility. John Lester in pinstripes next season.
Yeah, I think
so
too.
What a disaster that could be, though.
They love sticking it to the Red Sox, like with Jacoby Ellsbury. Like, they love sticking it to that team. So I would not be surprised.
Yeah. Who has the better rotation then? The Oakland A's or the Detroit Tigers? Because these two teams are geared up to face each other in the playoffs. You got Jeff Samardzija, Sonny Gray, and now John Lester with the Oakland A's. Detroit Tigers have Max Scherzer, David Price, and I don't know who you would throw in there, Anibal Sanchez.
Or
Verlander. I mean, Verlander could be their fourth or fifth best starter.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Last start was pretty good, and Rick Porcello's having a pretty good season as well. And it was funny reading some stuff about Billy Beane and Dombrowski going back and forth, where Dombrowski makes the deal for David Price and says, all right, you've got 1 minute to make a trade, Billy, to pick up another
for
pitcher.
Chris Sale.
To pick up Chris Sale. And he didn't, obviously, but those two teams would be great to see in the ALCS. But if you had to give the edge to one, who would it be?
I go with the A's right now.
Yeah.
I mean, Lester's been having a great year right now, and they just picked up an ace. Now they have five number ones that are out there doing incredible work. So I give it to the A's.
I take the other side. I think Detroit's got a better rotation, but I think that if these two teams meet in the ALCS, how much are fans going to hate that baseball? 2-1 games, 1-0 games, 1-1 games. Everybody
true
wants
baseball
offense.
Fans shouldn't hate that stuff.
I know, but you want casual fans are the ones who are
they're the ones that matter.
That's the market. True baseball fans are going to watch no matter what.
Yeah.
You want casual fans to watch to boost those ratings. They're going to hate it.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, because those 9-8 games also take 5 hours, especially in the playoffs. Yeah. So maybe you'll have 2.5 hour games.
Your casual fan doesn't have an appreciation for the subtleties and the nuances of pitching and how cool it is that when Justin Verlander sets a guy up who's not expecting his hook or whatever, right? So I think there will be casual fans who are unhappy.
I don't know. When you see a pitcher that's really in his groove and he's just knocking people down, I mean, it's. I think it'd be pretty exciting to watch. I think people will be in there. It's going to be fine. I mean, these are great teams. Like, I obviously don't want the Jays to do really well, but this is like, these two teams. And what they've done is just shown that they need to win. They want to win now. And that's what I think is really exciting about this guy. You have these years of, Moneyball and Billy Beane sort of just not getting there. And now they're saying, we're going to make the deal that puts us over the edge. We are going for everything. We're going for broke right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I saw Moneyball. I think everybody did. There was no World Series parade at the end of that thing. And the Detroit Tigers, for all the regular season success and making the playoffs and making the World Series and having their pitchers throw the ball all over the place in that loss in the World Series and getting beaten by the eventual World Series winner last year and the Boston Red Sox as well, they need to win a World Series. I mean, it's great to have all this regular season success, and you wouldn't begrudge any of the moves Dave Dombrowski or Billy Beane has made over their tenure. But the World Series, I mean, flags fly forever. And at a certain point, you keep stocking the shelves and looking towards the future. That's all well and good to be a consistently good team. But is there ever going to be a better opportunity, especially for the Oakland A's, in a season like this where the Red Sox are garbage? They're not going to make the playoffs. Yankees are going to be life and death to make the playoffs. Is there ever going to be a go-for-it year like this for the Oakland A's ever again?
Yeah, shout out Drew Fairservice there. Flags fly forever. Sometimes you gotta go for it. Sometimes you just got to push all in, right? It's like poker. Like at some point, I mean, you can be a really responsible, reasonable manager of your team and set it up for success down the line and really build a great farm system and prospects and stuff like that. But if you never, people, when people are looking back at your Wikipedia page or whatever Wikipedia is 20 years from now, they're going to say, hey, how many championships are on there? How many you got?
Yeah, exactly. And right now you're looking at zero for this incarnation of the Oakland A's and the Detroit Tigers. It was a little bit surprising to see David Price move, especially considering where the Tampa Bay Rays were before he moved. I mean, they were one of the hottest teams post All-Star break. Remember how...
That's a tough choice that they made.
Imagine being a Tampa Bay Rays fan. Well, first of all, you and all five, the other Tampa Bay Rays fans probably get together on Saturdays, talk about things, but that's got to be a bit tough for Joe Maddon and Evan Longoria, who are locked in there a little bit.
Do you think that they got enough back for Price? I mean, that's the big question. I'm like, what you could get a ton for him, I would have thought.
Yeah, this infield prospect for the Tigers is going to be make or break. I think people sleep a little bit on Drew Smyly, but this Adames kid,
right,
the infielder that the Tigers did give up for him, is maybe the linchpin of that deal. Not one that the Blue Jays had. They just couldn't have competed with either of these trades. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, the Rays are a team that they like to draft and develop their own guys. So like maybe they would that the whole like the Roy Halladay-esque trade of like, all right, give us your three best prospects. Like I don't know if that was as appealing to them as adding sure commodities, because they like to develop their own dudes, and they like to bring their own guys along at their own pace.
Yeah, and Nick Franklin can play in the major leagues pretty quickly, like right away.
Yeah.
And he was going to get moved. If not now, it was going to be in the offseason, you would have thought, because there's no way he's getting that kind of money in Tampa Bay with the Rays. But it's going to be interesting going forward into the playoffs, both between the Oakland A's and the Detroit Tigers. I think the Tigers have pretty much locked up the division title in the AL Central, but still the A's battling tooth and nail for that divisional title in the AL West with the Angels, who've had a little bit of a setback recently in their play against the Baltimore Orioles, but still lots to play out here as we head towards the postseason, late September and October. When we come back, P.K. Subban is in the city. I don't know if you felt the buzz. He's wearing his nice three-piece suit, and then he went into a room and got ripped by his own team for like a couple hours in arbitration. Still waiting a ruling on that. But what does this mean for the future of Mr. Subban in Montreal with the Canadiens? The man's going to get his money. Will it come in Montreal? We'll discuss next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis along with Dan Robson, Arden Dwelling, P.K. Subban, still in the city, I imagine. Although maybe he's jet-setting now. I guess his arbitration hearing is over, so he can be wherever he wants. Maybe he's going to Monaco. That's where I'd go if I had P.K. Subban's money. Supposed to be nice there. But he was in the city yesterday, arbitration hearing. The award has not been given yet to him, restricted free agent, as Montreal Canadiens offering $5.25 million on a one-year deal. He wants $8.5 million on a one-year deal. There's still talk that they are talking about a longer-term deal, although his agent yesterday, Don Meehan, says that's probably passed now. We're probably not thinking about that. We'll probably just go with the arbitration award at this point. P.K. Subban, I mean, outside of Sidney Crosby, is there an argument to be made that he is the face of the National Hockey League? And do the Montreal Canadiens believe in the long-term future of P.K. Subban in Montreal, Dan?
I mean, I think the relationship, you know, wherever they are right now, it's wounded for sure. I don't know where it's going to end up in the end. But yes, he is basically the face of the NHL in many ways. He's got the most personality. He's incredible on the ice, but he's also a star. And there's something to be said about that. He's definitely worth the money he's asking for, and will get a huge contract in a couple of years when he's up for it. He's going to get a massive one. He's going to be one of the best players in the game. Right now, it's about, like, what do the Habs think of him? And this is it's interesting to see where this is going to go.
Is it dangerous to evaluate a guy on what he brings to a team outside of his play on the ice? I mean, is it dangerous to pay a guy in a salary cap sport just because he's a face of the National Hockey League and he's good with the media and the fans love him? Isn't that kind of a dangerous thing?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's more than just that, though. I mean, the other side of it, I mean, it's, you know, he could be a personality and you're not going to pay him that money, but he's also, you know, incredible scorer. He still is one of the most offensive defensemen in the game, and he's essential to your team.
Why does he get short shrift all the time for his play? I mean, we saw it when the Canadian Olympic team and during those camps and the decision-making process with him finally ending up on the team and not in the rotation of top-tier defensemen on that team. People talking about, he's just an offensive defenseman. This is one of the top. I mean, is there any doubt that he's a top five defenseman in the National Hockey League? Like that's a thing, right?
I mean, I don't understand it either. It's this thing, this mystery that sort of follows PK though. People, his attitude, even the way he plays the game. I think it ruffles people sometimes the wrong way, and it kind of people they're not really sure about him for some reason. But that's been with him since he's as a teenager. I think it's a really fascinating part of his story.
It's ridiculous is what it is. It's crazy. Since this guy got in the league, he can do no right. I mean, no, he can't do it. Like, it's everything he does is a problem to people. And like, why? What is the problem with him? He's a very good hockey player who has a personality. Why are people upset about that?
I think there's, as unfortunate as it is, I think they're upset for that. I mean, I don't think everyone's upset with him. I think a lot of people really love PK Subban, and we're going to see him be one of the, he's going to be the face of the NHL as the years go on. Like, he's going to be the guy that is on TV doing things. He takes things to the next level, as we've seen. Like, he's always, he's the kind of guy who understands his, market. And he's a smart, smart young athlete. That's what I really admire about him. I think he's a really interesting guy on the ice for that reason.
This guy's the Canadian dream, man. Like, the immigrant family, grew up in Scarborough, didn't have a whole lot growing up, right? Yeah. He's got two brothers who are both going to be in the NHL as well. Like, it's the next Stalls or Sutters or whatever. And the fact that the face of that is a black family is incredible. That reflects what is happening in this country and how we are changing as a country. And it's incredible that he's having this success.
Why won't the Montreal Canadiens pay him?
well, the Canadiens are playing the game, right? They have the right to, lowball him and to go to arbitration. That's doing their thing.
That's the question I think that I'm really interested in, is just what is Martin Bergevin doing? Like, what is the game that they are playing? And they definitely are playing one. No, he's worth way more money than $5.25 million. He might not be worth $8.5 for 1 year if you look at what other players are making. I mean, but inevitably, I do think he's going to be the highest paid a defenseman in the league. I mean, there's obviously he's a top five defenseman, I think, and he's only going to get better. So, I mean, I think it's inevitable it's going to be there. I'm curious to see what they're doing. Do they plan on keeping him for a year right now and then maybe moving him and getting something big for him in return? Because you'll get a lot for PK Subban.
Yeah, but then you're not going to get PK Subban back for PK Subban, right? I mean, everybody talks about the elite offensive players and how you got to have one. You got to have a superstar. You got to have a Steven Stamkos. You got to have a Jonathan Toews. You got to have an elite level defenseman. Isn't that more important? I mean, look at what Zdeno Chara means to the Boston Bruins.
That's why I think someone should sign him to an offer sheet. Why not? Break the code. Screw the code. Sign him to an offer sheet. Give up the four first-rounders, five first-rounders, whatever, because you're not going to get a PK Subban in the draft right now. I mean, this is a sure thing. Yeah. This is a proven commodity right now. And if you're a team that the draft's piss poor anyway, take PK Subban. Do it. If the Habs aren't going to match, if they don't want to give him a big, long contract, swoop in there.
I 100% agree.
Ruffle some feathers.
I mean, I think I don't think it's going to happen, but I do think it should happen. I do think that you're right.
Never
the code
happens.
The
Why
code
not?
Is silly. I mean, because we're polite. They don't step aside. Well, he's your guy.
What about NHL GMs is polite? You heard these guys talk to each other.
They want to fight in a barn. Some of them.
Oh, there's a certain code and there's a certain politeness to hockey that's it comes off rough, but there's a code. That's the reality. They should. Somebody should step in and say, hey, like, if you guys don't want him, we want him.
Yeah,
sure.
We'll take him.
Yeah.
Well. I think we all agree that he's going to get his money somewhere. If that's the case, and I know it's well within the Montreal Canadiens' right to just go to arbitration, get him on this one-year deal, which is going to be somewhere between 5.25 and 8.5, so maybe it's at, 7.75 or 8 or whatever. Eventually, he's going to get his money, and if you believe in him, just give him his money now. It's pretty clear that the Montreal Canadiens aren't 100% sold on him, right? Or else they would have given him a longer term deal.
Yeah, and I know, and actually Ryan Dixon had a good piece on sportsnet.ca about PK Subban's relationship with the Habs, and it's sort of this weird thing where they weren't really willing to go all in with him during the regular season. Then obviously he shows up in the playoffs and plays incredibly well in the playoffs. But he's there's a tension there. There has been in the way they look in at how he plays and stuff. I don't really get it. I mean, he can be a defensive liability sometimes. He's not. He makes some mistakes. He definitely, you know, steps out and he rushes the. That's the thing. And everybody does. But he also puts points up. I mean, he also helps your offense a great deal. And he's an essential part of that team. And he was in the playoffs.
Would you rather have him or Dion Phaneuf, who makes a whole lot of money?
Right? $7 million, right?
Yeah. I mean, is that what you'd rather have? I mean, I don't have a problem having a guy like that on my hockey team because the good outweighs the bad. If he pinches once in a while, he makes a poorly timed aggressive play once in a while, but the good like overwhelmingly outweighs that stuff, all the good stuff that he does on the ice, the goals that he scores and the carrying the puck up the ice and the presence in the defensive zone, that outweighs like a couple missteps to me.
Yeah, and another part of this whole arbitration thing, which is, and I was talking to Chris Johnston yesterday on the radio, who was down there staking out PK Subban, commenting on bathroom breaks when they were taking place. He was giving the play-by-play down there. Good on Chris Johnston for sticking it out for a couple hours. But it would be interesting. We were talking about maybe the NHL is missing a golden money-making opportunity to start putting these arbitration hearings on pay-per-view and a camera in there. And hear what's going on, but maybe it would just be boring. Maybe it'd just be lawyer talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Should get in there for sure. That'd be interesting.
We might find it's a bunch of just old white guys talking. Yeah, like it's not
gavel slamming and whatever. Yeah.
One of the questions is, I mean, now that they're arguing as to why he's not worth what he says. I think that's interesting. I would like to know what they're saying to PK Subban.
Exactly. I mean, is there a possibility that the fact that this got to this point, first time it's happened in the National Hockey League since 2011, they've gone to an arbitration hearing. Is it possible? And I know both sides will say, we understand it's just business. This is just business, not personal. But the fact of the matter is, the Montreal Canadiens want him at the lowest price possible. And that means proving a point that he's not worth $8.5 million. And he's worth closer to $5.25 million. So you're going to make that case to the arbitrator. And PK Subban's there. He doesn't have to be there. He decided he wants to be there. He wants to hear this firsthand. I mean, is it possible that that is a problem going forward, whether it's a long-term contract or just souring the overall relationship?
I think it's a huge problem, because I think the reality is when it comes time for him to be an unrestricted free agent, he's going to go wherever he wants and people are going to want him. And if he doesn't feel like if he remembers all of this stuff, well, he obviously will. If he thinks about it and see how much it affects the way his relationship with them, he's just going to go somewhere else. He's going to get money. Someone's going to pay him top dollar to play for their team.
That man is money.
It's inevitable, but where is he going to play? I mean, I don't think he's going to retire as a Hat. Is he coming to? I mean, that would be pretty big.
don't hit the player, hit the game. That's what I'd say.
The Habs are playing the game, right?
The Habs, their motivation is to pay him as little as possible.
Right, but they might lose him because of that.
Yep.
Yeah, but I'm talking.
Is it worth it?
I'm talking about the relationship souring. I mean, like for PK, they're just playing the game. You got to understand that he's playing the game as well because he wants as much money as possible.
Fair enough.
Is it fair to compare it to like a different industry? Imagine your boss said, "Hey, we want to pay you this," and you said, "No, I'm worth this." And you guys had to go to arbitration, and your boss told you, "Well, you know, Arden, I'm looking at your last few stories. I don't know."
Gems, all of them.
Punctuation mistakes. Too many commas. Too many exclamation points. I don't think you're worth what you're asking. I mean, is it fair to make that comparison? Because I know if that were me, I'd be freaking out and be pissed off.
I don't hold that kind of leverage.
I want to go to arbitration. Actually, I'm hoping. Yeah, I'm.
You're
talking
that confident in yourself, eh, Dan?
No,
you're actually not the face of this franchise, Dan. Right? That's what it comes down to.
Okay. No.
It is a weird. Scenario. And you did, I mean, I kind of threw in Toronto there facetiously, but maybe I shouldn't. And maybe teams like, or maybe players like PK Subban and Steven Stamkos use the city as leverage for their next deal, right? Because it's always dangling out there. And we've heard it so many times. How many guys, oh yes, once we get to free agency, we're going to Toronto. That's where I'm from. It's a hockey Becca. Never happens.
But never
happens.
Where are they going to get the money to sign all these guys that everyone says they're going to sign? They're going to get Tavares, Stamkos, Subban. Where's the? You can't do that.
Yeah. Well, the cap is going up hugely, but not to $200 million.
No, and Phaneuf's here until 20.
That's the thing. They got to get out from under that if you want to bring in. You're going to pay Subban and Phaneuf at $8, $9 million apiece.
But how exciting would it be to have Stamkos and Phaneuf in Toronto? I mean, it would just be huge.
And Tavares and Gretzky and Anschuk. Yeah, let's get all those guys. Let's get Lemieux. Let's get all those guys. Right? Yeah.
Don't you feel, I mean, Why does it not happen? Where, I mean, we're going to talk about Cleveland sports in a little bit, Dan, and you have a pretty good insight on that, being in Cleveland, writing some stories on Johnny Football and getting a sense of the LeBron James thing. LeBron James, it's a cap sport, the NBA. He's the best player in the league. And yes, there's a future there in Cleveland, some nice, bright young stars. But he wanted to go back home to Cleveland. Like I said, we keep hearing this. So many guys want to come back home to Toronto. Never happens. It really rarely happens in the NHL where players want to go back to their hometowns, to Canadian cities. Why doesn't that happen?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of... You can be cynical about it too, and that I think players sometimes just want to go where their brand is going to look the best. And I think that, I mean, obviously, you know, it makes sense to come back to Toronto. But I mean, there's also, I don't give much credence to the idea that it's a tough place to play and that the media is too tough and that kind of stuff. These are professional athletes who make millions of dollars. I mean, I don't think they care one way or the other about that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I mean, it doesn't happen because the cars just don't fall that way. They don't have the money to sign that person. LeBron is going to make max dollars to go back to Cleveland. He's not being a saint going back there. He's going to go back. He took a 2-year deal so that when they get a TV deal, he can make more money. He wants to make money. And he's going back to a team that's looking pretty good right now in terms of the prospects that Toronto was giving them.
If I was a hockey player and I was from Toronto, I'd go play in Phoenix. Go play in Arizona. Like, so, like, if you play in Toronto, you can't get onto the subway without someone calling you a jerk off, right?
What you want? Don't you want to be a New York Yankee?
Absolutely. Some people don't want that level of fame.
That's why you're not a professional athlete, though, Arden, right?
There's a lot of reasons why I'm not a professional athlete.
That's
why you're a writer.
Yeah, you're right. That's probably reason number 275 that you're not a professional athlete.
Well, the main one.
Some people don't want that credibility. Some people just want to lay low and fly under the radar. Look how many guys are in the National Hockey League. I think they all want fame.
No. I don't feel bad. I don't know. Maybe that's the case.
I'm not saying you should feel bad for them, but some people don't want that.
It's the game. I think if you are an athlete, you're thinking not just about you being incredibly good at the sport you play, but you're also thinking about you being having the widest audience and being the biggest personality you can be.
Don't think about making my money and buying my cottage and retiring at 38 and like living the life.
The amount of money that you can make outside of hockey in this city on endorsements or whatever. I mean, this is, if you want to make the money, here's, even if you're not making it on the ice, you're going to make it somewhere else. I almost wonder if it is a Canadian thing, if there is something to the fact that it is Canadians not returning home. There's not this... Because maybe they do feel like you, Arden, that they don't, it's too much. Yeah. The spotlight's too big. I don't need that. I don't need that pressure. Now, they're professional athletes, and they I would think that their mindsets are a little different, but that seems like more of a Canadian than an American thing. There's no arrogance of, I'm going to go to the hockey mecca with the spotlights on me, and I'm going to bring a Stanley Cup back to Toronto. I mean, we don't see that, but Canadians.
You know who's like that, though? P.K. Subban is like that. Wrote about him recently, and he says quite clearly, I want to be where the spotlight is. I want to be in the biggest market, which is why I think, I mean, whenever he moves, he's going somewhere big.
Yeah.
And he's not going to shy away.
I mean, PK is wired that way. He's got a lot of charisma, and he likes being out there. He likes people recognizing him. He likes being the center of attention. I would argue there's a lot of hockey players that don't like that, that aren't fans of that. And as much money as you can make here, a lot of hockey players are fine with, okay, I made $30 million in salary. I don't need to go to $50 million. I already have $30 million. How greedy can you be? Some people can be very greedy. Some people can be very
greedy. $20 million is $20 million, man. And I made the comparison, maybe it's a Canadian thing versus an American thing, although Phil Kessel's an American. I don't think Phil Kessel's all that enamored with being in the hockey mecca, right?
So hockey players are pretty reserved people, and Canadians are too. Like, I think there's a lot of them who wouldn't really want all that spotlight. Not everybody wants to be Ocho Cinco, you know? Like, not everybody wants that brand. Some people just want to do their job and then get out.
It's just hard to believe as a professional athlete that that would be your mindset. But who knows? I mean, P.K. Subban...
being a normal person?
You didn't become a professional athlete to stay out of the spotlight. I don't know. That just doesn't make sense.
No, you're good at athletics. You were just good at hockey. And you can make millions doing it. You're not doing it for yourself.
No, you can't just be good at hockey. You start... When you play a sport, you end up being... You dedicate your life and all this money to it because you want to make the NHL. It's not like, I accidentally was good at hockey.
Look at Sidney Crosby. How much does that guy like the spotlight? How much does that guy want to be on cameras and things like that? He's a guy who's just good at hockey.
I mean, it's very interesting. I don't know.
Was he going to work at Home Depot?
But I think he cherishes his role as being the, like, Canada's captain and being the leader. Like, he's a very responsible guy, and he doesn't make mistakes, for sure. But he's out there.
But he's not seeking it. He's not seeking the spotlight at all.
He doesn't have to seek it. It's there. He's the best hockey player of a generation.
Right. Like, I think he would prefer if there was less spotlight, honestly.
I don't know.
Do you think he would prefer to play? Like, say they brought nobody. They didn't have an arena with seats. It was just all TV cameras, Pittsburgh Penguins to watch him. You had to go on TV and watch him. There was no post-game interviews. Do you really think he would prefer that the atmosphere of a wild, sold-out arena in Pittsburgh when they're in the playoffs and going nuts?
Those are different things. Fans and media. Fans and spotlight and attention. Those are totally different things.
Having
fans in the seats is something completely different than like being like
you can't separate them.
But your point was about being on the streets and people coming and talking to you. I don't think Sidney Crosby cares about a sports writer walk up and be like, what happened in this game? Like, when you go down into a locker room, how annoying is that really for them to give you, sit there and look at you and give you cliches for like 10 minutes? Like, it's the easiest thing in the world that cannot affect them that much.
It's not just that, though.
Well, what else is it? Are dealing with their opinions? Like, why do you, they don't care. You're making millions of dollars to play the game way better than they ever could.
There's an expectation of star players that you'll be available at all times for everything.
You should be.
Why?
Because you're making so much money.
You have a life. I would want a life.
No, but if you're a CEO of a company and you're making tons of money, you're very, very busy for that reason. When you make top dollar, it's not just because you're good at a sport, it's because you need to be an ambassador. If you're the captain of the team or that kind of stuff, that's part of your job. But the fans are the most important thing. They're the reason you're making that kind of money.
I don't think you owe the public anything just because you're well paid. I don't think that's a good enough reason to all of a sudden owe the rest of us minions something.
Like, we're showing up to watch you. I think that's the reason you're getting well paid is because of the fans.
You owe your employer who's giving you the money, and
I mean, they're paying you to be a hockey player. Are they paying you to be a personality?
They're not just paying you. Yeah, absolutely.
Does it say that in your contract? I mean, what?
I think it's implied. If you're
you're getting paid to score goals. That's what you're getting paid to.
No, it's Dion Phaneuf making $7 million wearing a C on his jersey. You don't think that's part of his job is to be an ambassador and talk to the media?
I think so, but I think if you come down to what you actually pay a hockey player to do, it's to score goals. Anything that a hockey player does past that is bonus. No. Why do we look to these people to be role models and to be like ambassadors?
I'm not saying be a role model.
Why do we look to them to be this?
I'm not saying you'd be a role model.
They're athletes. They're just playing sports.
I'm saying you do have an obligation to deal with the fact that people want to pay attention to you because that's your role as a professional athlete. That's part of the job description of being a professional athlete. Yeah. That's what I would argue. It's implicit in the fact that you've made it. And I think that's important. I mean, that's the reality of it.
Yeah, and PK Subban, certainly the face of not just the National Hockey League, but the Montreal Canadiens, and they're hoping for years to come, although maybe not. We'll have to see. When we come back, Rogers Cup cranking up on Monday. Milos Raonic playing in the City Open in Washington, D.C. He's now the highest seed left there. Thomas Berdych knocked out a couple of days ago, so... Could be an interesting couple of weeks for Milos Raonic as the Rogers Cup gets underway on Monday. No Rafa Nadal, but the other big names will be there. Novak Djokovic in the city right now, in fact. Could this be the first time a Canadian man wins this tournament here in Toronto? It's very possible. We're gonna save it, Dan. I know you're amped up to talk about tennis.
Chomping at the bit.
I love it.
Look at him.
Just relax, man. We'll talk about it at 11:30. I'm Ben Annis. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Jordan Heath Rawlings.
I've been a cult for almost all of my adult life. But I guess in life and in sports, we all know that nothing lasts forever.
Quarterback transactions are the earthquakes of the NFL. The biggest ones rearrange the entire landscape, and the aftershocks can be felt for months and even years later. When the Indianapolis Colts announced on a March day in 2012 that they'd released Peyton Manning, the entire NFL shuddered. The fallout from Manning's move to Denver changed the 2012 draft, made starters out of backups, and gave us the NFL's worst quarterback competition in recent memory. But what if the Colts had kept their franchise quarterback? In our What If issue, we looked at how different things would have been had the Colts really committed to Manning's recovery. Tim Tebow stays in Denver until the Broncos draft Geno Smith one season later. Cleveland never even meets Johnny Manziel because the Browns are too busy building a contender around Andrew Luck. The Jets settle for Brian Hoyer, and at the end of it all, Manziel gets to stay close to home. He's chosen with the first pick of the second round by the Houston Texans. And yes, he's their unquestioned Week 1 starter. In an alternate universe somewhere, it happened, and Johnny Football owes Peyton a beer.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet magazine, available on newsstands now, and for your tablet and mobile phone on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand. Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis, along with Dan Robson, Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet Magazine. Rogers Cup, it's underway on Monday. Novak Djokovic is in the city. I don't know if you could feel the buzz. He's around. His month of July was pretty ridiculous. Guy won Wimbledon, got married, he's about to have a kid. And that's like not bad. That's getting it done. That's having a month. And now... Yeah, and he did it all without gluten as well. He hasn't changed his haircut in his career either. He's very, you know, straight-ahead guy, Novak Djokovic. But he's going to be the number one seed for the start of the men's tournament here in Toronto, the women's tournament in Montreal. And he's got a pretty big personality, I would say. Is he doing a pretty good job being the face of men's tennis now as Roger Federer is about to leave and Rafa Nadal continues to have injury problems? Is that a good guy for tennis to hang its future on, Novak Djokovic?
I mean, I like him 100%. I've seen him. I last year was at the Rogers Cup and watched him playing, it was 2 years ago. Sorry, I was watching him play, and he was just, his energy is fantastic. Like he's the kind of guy who plays with the crowd. He takes it very seriously, but he's likable. He's got a personality, and that's what you want in a star, I think.
I mean, Milos Raonic has a big personality as well.
Does he?
Does he?
I don't think he does.
Maybe he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's got a Canadian personality in a way. Like,
he's an intense guy. That's what I get from him. I get a real intense read from him. He's like, he's got that like Roy Holiday sort of thing going on. Like, he's a very focused dude.
I don't know. I think you can joke around with him. I'm sure he's not. He doesn't take himself too seriously, I don't think.
Well, it's hard.
It might be the face. He's got kind of the face, the look on his face. Just looks
maybe the shorts to me are a little short. Like I will give you that. But he continues to play. He's playing in the City Open this week in D.C. He's now the highest seed after Thomas Burdick was knocked out. I posed this question before the show, and before you were here, Arden, taking your time. But Dan thought it was a good question, so I remembered it. I'm going to ask it again. What would be the bigger moment in Canadian sports? A Canadian winning the Canadian Open, which just wrapped up Royal Montreal last week, or this tournament, the Rogers Cup? What would be the bigger accomplishment?
It would depend on the field for me. It would depend who was beat.
Well, the Canadian Open, the field is going to be crappy going forward, right? Until they get out of that time slot. But the Rogers Cup, I mean, outside of Nadal, all the best players are there.
So that's why I'd put the Rogers Cup above the Canadian Open, because you've just got better competition. If Mike Weir wins the Canadian Open playing against a bunch of scrubs, like, all right, fine. But if Milos Raonic, beats Djokovic, beats Rafa, whoever is in town, that is something.
Well, that's part of the story too. It's who it is and what the narrative that's going on right now. If Weir won, that'd be great. Everybody'd be like, oh, good for him. He wants to be again. It's great he won the Canadian Open. It would be a big moment. But if Milos is basically on the edge of breaking into the top five, he's against these guys that he just can't beat, that are incredible, that are the next level in that sense. And he needs to get so if he does that in Toronto at the Rogers Cup, I mean that's huge. That story is enormous if he were able to win this time.
He does seem to be a degree off that next level of like going up to that, you know, to that upper echelon of men's tennis. But he's right there. But I mean, he was saying when he played Federer and lost Federer at Wimbledon, I want to say, he said like Federer didn't make a mistake. And he said, I've got a great serve, but I need somebody to make a mistake.
Right.
And that's what he's playing against he's playing as perfection, and he's not perfect. He has a perfect serve, incredible serve, probably the best serve in tennis, but he's has to work on his speed and his mobility and on his ability to return serves. I mean, he's a flawed tennis player still, but that's exciting. We're watching him get better, and I do think he's going to, I don't know if he's ever going to be number one in the world, but he's going to break into the top five.
Yeah, he's ranked six for this tournament, which starts on Monday. And you look at, talking about the field, look at the last few winners. I mean, 11 years of winners at this tournament, starting in 2003. Andy Roddick, Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic, Rafa Nadal, Andy Murray, Djokovic, Nadal. Yeah. I mean, that's called getting the best players to show up for this tournament, right? Because it is, I mean, it's a warm-up for the U.S. Yeah. Open. There's a lot of points on the line for this tournament. This is an elite tournament on the ATP Tour.
Yeah, it really is. And that's the thing. It's the people don't necessarily skip it unless, you know, they have to, they're looking at the Open and need to get better. But people are showing up, and that's what makes it really, really, really exciting. And last year when, you know, he made it to the finals last year. Milos made it to the finals last year. This is just a great, really great story.
Yeah, he got his clock cleaned by Nadal, 6-2, 6-2. Yeah,
that happens.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Who hasn't been there?
Yeah. And that's, he's had his issues with the top players outside of Andy Murray, who he's beaten a couple of times, but to come through with a signature win against a Nadal, a Djokovic, or a Federer. That's the men's side of thing. The women in Montreal, which I would say everybody could agree, Jeannie Bouchard has a far greater opportunity to not just win this tournament, but eventually win a Grand Slam one day. I mean, I think I'd be shocked now if Jeannie Bouchard goes her entire career without winning one of these things. She's going to be the next Canadian woman to win a Grand Slam. She was in her first in Wimbledon, got her clock cleaned again by Petra Kvitova, who's in this tournament in Montreal. But you mentioned personality thing, right? Mm. I mean, Bouchard's got it. All right, come on, give me this, Arden.
Yeah.
If Raonic doesn't have it, you got to give it to Bouchard, right?
I feel bad for her, the questions they ask. Oh,
but
the way she's treated, it's almost like they don't take her seriously. It's
well,
bothers
that's probably
me.
More,
it's troubling.
She doesn't get that from North American journalists. I feel like that's a very European thing. They have the more tabloid stuff over there. I really don't think those are the type of questions that get asked over here.
Yeah, I would hope not. I would certainly hope not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be a reality of women's tennis and something that like internationally that they face often. It's not just her getting questions like
right.
that. But she's in believable heights, and you're right. She is going to win a Grand Slam, and this is just an incredible time, for Canadian tennis in this era. It'll be interesting to see if this is something that repeats or if this is just an anomaly in our.
Aren't there kids like at their local tennis club looking at Jeannie Bouchard and Milos Raonic saying, "I want to be the next." Isn't that possible?
Yeah, I mean, there's kids.
Where did these two come from, though? But I mean, where was the impetus for Milos Raonic and Jeannie Bouchard to emerge as tennis superstars in this country? I mean, if anything, there should be more American stars. I mean, Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi. That was a great time for American tennis. Where are the young American tennis stars? They don't exist.
Yeah.
Why are there two of the top 10 tennis stars playing in this country? I don't know.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
You sound outraged.
Why are we so good? I'm confused. I just want answers, okay?
Well,
a logical guy.
There's a lot of questions about what's happening in American tennis right now, and there's no one in the top 50. I mean, we're like, what is going on there? How is Milos the best North American player right now? And that's really exciting for us. But and where did it come from? I mean, it came from a kid with passion for tennis at a young age. It was unique, who managed to excel beyond everyone's expectations, and then went and got coached internationally after getting some great coaching here.
Yeah.
Casey Curtis and Thornhill and all these years of getting up early in the morning and doing all this kind of stuff. And now he goes off and gets the best coaching in the world and is doing exceptional. But how do you repeat that? I don't know. And that's the question.
You get up every morning, you do 100 serves against the wall, and every morning you do that. It takes 10,000 hours to get good at something.
That's what I heard.
Thanks, Malcolm.
Yeah.
Anytime.
That's how you guys got good at writing, right? You just wrote every day.
Luke.
Interesting story out of the PGA Tour. Dustin Johnson is going to take a six-month leave of absence. Be interesting because it'll, I imagine, be 6 months to the day that he returns from this mental health break, which by all accounts, golf.com calling it a suspension. PGA Tour does not announce suspensions. They've suspended people before and you had no idea about it. I mean, John Daly was reprimanded continuously. Now, there are reports that Dustin Johnson tested positive for cocaine. There was even reports that he had dalliances with other PGA Tour members' wives. I mean, this is... We saw this with Tiger Woods, a little bit of the salacious side of the PGA Tour, but it's not a sport you necessarily associate with this kind of stuff, which kind of makes it even more interesting, at least to me.
I think it's amazing that they can still play golf. I mean, I can't play golf when I'm as sober as I am.
But for some people, that's the only way they can play golf. Ian Leggett, had the same point yesterday on Connected that, I don't understand how you draw the club back when you're seeing, three golf balls.
You don't find the more beers you have on the golf course, start getting a little bit better?
I'm never better.
You start loosening up the shoulders a little bit. You know?
If I have one beer, I'm a little bit better. Once I get to that 2-3 beer mark, I'm a disaster.
I just care.
There's a pocket there. There's a bubble you got to get yourself into. But do we care if Dustin Johnson does cocaine
and
has dalliances, as Ben so nicely put it? I mean, do we care? He's got how many top 10 finishes this year? I mean, this guy's having a great, great year. Do we care?
It's interesting. It's about the PGA and their image. I mean, not announcing suspensions and trying to sort of sweep this stuff. Or they're like, oh, we really support him. He's getting help. And like you're saying, it'll probably be exactly, 6 months to get back. I mean, everyone kind of knows what's going on. But the way there's something about the PGA in that sense that it's this, I don't know what the right word is. I mean, they're just they're very proper in that sense.
Yeah.
They don't like this kind of,
very conservative. Yeah.
And I think it's kind of silly, but this is the reality of it.
Yeah. I wonder, I guess that's the whole point of not announcing suspensions, right? It's to protect the image of the PGA Tour, but does it do a good job? Because I feel like in this age of, I don't know, the Twitter era and 24-hour sports coverage, it's going to come out, right? Like, it didn't take very long for us to find out what exactly was going on with Dustin Johnson. And doesn't that make the PGA Tour look even worse when that happens?
It looks silly.
Well, yeah, it comes down to how naive can you be as a person, right?
Right.
to just assume that no professional athlete has ever done anything untoward in their lives, right? If you can be that naive to be like, oh, his back's acting up again. Oh, my goodness.
We were pretty naive about Tiger Woods.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a fascinating story in the way that we were. I mean, the people that were insiders weren't naive. Everyone knew about Tiger Woods that knew about golf and was on the tour, but no one let it come out. And that's part of the protection. It's part of the code of golf in that sense.
When I saw pictures before he was outed and it was like, oh yeah, Tiger Woods is in Vegas with Michael Jordan, I was like, okay, this guy's up to some stuff. This guy's living his life.
I don't know.
You're not there to go to, read the Bible. You're in Vegas with MJ.
Yeah. Yeah, count me among one of the many, though, that was, I just thought, he's a family guy, keeps close to the vest.
Great guy.
Doesn't go to Perkins all that often, does he? Apparently he does. It's his favorite place. Mr. Paulina Gretzky, going to be back in 6 months, it seems like. Yesterday, I don't know if you saw the video. and if you haven't, it's not like I suggest you do check it out, but Paul George, it just suffered a horrific, horrific leg injury. It was Kevin Ware-esque. I mean, it was almost identical thing where he hit his leg. He was going back for a block on James Harden, went up and then came down and hit his leg right on the stanchion of the basket. And the leg it went 90 degrees, okay? That's what happened. Broke his leg. He's gone for, I imagine, I don't even think they've announced an official time frame for him, but there's no chance he comes back this year. Probably going to miss a significant portion of next year. Maybe never comes back to being Paul George again.
Yeah.
But it was one of those gruesome videos. First of all, maybe this is a good question, a good way to start this. When something graphic like that, an injury of that nature, do you want to see it? Do you want highlight shows? We showed it on Connected. Now, we didn't slow it down, show multiple replays. It wasn't like the Zapruder film. But we did show it once and at normal speed. Is that something you think, that if you give the proper warning to viewers that they should, that you should show that?
I don't want to see it. I mean, I'm fine with Connected showing it and it being on air, but I personally, I can't deal with it. And I actually went a surprising amount of time without seeing the Kevin Ware injury because I knew I'd heard about it.
I don't think I've still seen it.
Oh, really? I just knew it was going to happen. And I said, I'm not. And then somebody finally sent me a still of it, jokingly, and I didn't believe it because it's still and you're seeing what's happening in it. I mean, I can't handle that kind of stuff.
No, me neither. I could never be a doctor. No. I mean, that's reason 275 why I could never be a doctor.
It's a lot of things we could not be, the three of us.
Oh, athletes, doctors, sports.
There's some people that aren't affected by stuff. Yeah.
Radio personalities.
Paul Jones made the reference to Jorge Garbajosa, the leg injury he suffered. Mm-hmm. I believe it was in Boston against the Celtics. And Jonesy told the story on Twitter about he was calling the game for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He had to turn away from the court. He could not watch what was happening and listening to Garbajosa scream. Maybe that was the most bizarre thing for me is Paul George was pretty stoic. And for a guy that almost...
Shock.
Yeah. You know, but I saw him when he's coming out when they strapped them on the board and they're carrying them out and they're like, Like your leg just broke in half. But how are you even caring about anybody else that's cheering? Like I would just, I don't know. It's pretty incredible.
He's an ambassador. Yeah. He's thinking about his brand. Come on.
I don't know. I do worry about what's going to happen with him. He's one of the best young basketball players in the game.
You're not worried about his brand though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not worried about his brand. I mean, I'm worried about his, I think his career is in jeopardy is what I mean.
What could be in jeopardy though, honestly, is this international play that happens in the NBA. It happens in every sport. And we hear, oh, is the NHL going to go to the Olympics? There's that risk of injury. There's injuries every time these tournaments happen, whether it's the Olympics, whether it's the FIBA World Cup of Basketball, the prestigious FIBA World Cup of Basketball, which is taking place at the end of this month. Well, tell you what, it just cost the Indiana Pacers their entire season, their franchise player, for maybe a couple of years. Is it fair, though, that now there's going to be this conversation? It will happen. Yeah, it's already started that the, you know, GMs, owners are saying, well, why are we doing this? Stupid. Why are we doing this? Risking injury for a relatively meaningless tournament.
And I mean, it makes sense when it comes down to the meaningless, relatively meaningless tournament. Like the Olympics is one thing when everyone all of a sudden is paying attention, but only real basketball fans are paying attention to this kind of thing. And before Paul George got injured, I mean, you're looking at Kevin Love sat out in this time too, because he's, you know, probably going to get traded.
Because he had a premonition that his leg would be snapped in half if he played
this. Yeah, I saw it. So, I mean, I think this is, it's fair to question allowing athletes to play in these kind of tournaments.
That's why you have insurance, right? I mean, if you want to have a World Cup of anything, then you need the best in the world. You want the best athletes playing and performing at these events. You don't want it to be the scrubs that couldn't make the NBA. You want the best.
But the insurance you're going to get for a player being injured isn't going to be the value of what they would give you on the court
by taking
you to possibly a finals with this Indiana team. Like, they're not going to get back what they lost. It's unfortunate.
But you can't just hold every good player out of international
events.
And
it's a dangerous world, you know? You can get hurt walking across the street. What are you going to do?
And I don't disagree with that. I just think I do understand the argument that that GMs and owners would make on that. And I do think that's an interesting debate. Because you want, obviously, your best players to play for your country. And you want to know where do you draw the line in that sense.
And the player wants to play for their country, more importantly. At what point do you, like, impede on his right to represent his country? And, like, on you know, his right to, like, go and do, you know, and live his life and do those things?
We only got a couple minutes left. So I do want to get to Dan. You were in Cleveland. I mean, there's got to we got to talk about that. I mean, it's not like you went to Cleveland for no reason. Because nobody does that.
Yeah, the
you
Christmas
don't voluntarily go to Cleveland for no reason.
I like Cleveland, man. I'm a fan of Cleveland.
I've never been, so I don't know.
Underrated.
It's just easy to rip from where I'm sitting right now.
Underrated.
I think you're right. It was underrated. And obviously, I'm going at an interesting time for Cleveland. So the fans were super excited and optimistic and probably, in some cases, a little overly optimistic. I don't know. Like, they look at Johnny Manziel as, like, this is going to be the greatest quarterback of all time. This is going to be insane. I mean, some fans are like that. Others are obviously just pessimism has been just, you know, born into them. But yeah, it was a really fun scene. It was really interesting just to see the circus around Johnny Manziel and trying to see, you know, where he's going to land this year.
And Brian Hoyer's going to there's no chance he's Johnny football starts game one, right?
Well, and then Johnny, it sounds like he's having a hard time really transitioning into the pro game, which is understandable. It's not, this is different and he has to learn the playbook and everything. So it's going to take time. I don't think Brian Hoyer or Manziel is going to start this season, but you might see him probably through the year. I think that's going to happen.
This is a question we asked last week. You weren't here. We're talking about you, that you were in Cleveland. So your ears were probably burning, but it was a question we asked last week. Had Toronto usurped Cleveland as the most sad sack sports city in North America? I mean, having been there firsthand, it seems like things are on the up and up for Cleveland. Yeah. Can you maybe hand the title over to Toronto?
I think it's a difficult comparison. I think Toronto and Cleveland are such different cities that, it's taken some time for us to win something, and things aren't always looking up, and we get excited we make the playoffs for the first time in a while in basketball, and that's pretty great. So I do, but Cleveland definitely is, the fans there had a passion I hadn't seen before. It was really fun just to be, I was at the first day of training camp and there were 3,000 people there. And the guy that I talked to got there at 2:30 in the morning and it was just madness. I had never seen that in Toronto. So, I mean, I think it's definitely a different situation.
You were in the dog pound?
I was right in the dog. I watched the whole thing from the dog pound. It was just fun to be in there with all those guys.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting sports city. Did you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I didn't. No, I didn't have time. I was down in Akron doing a story on LeBron James, and so I'm doing two for the magazine.
Oh, did you get a cupcake that he was handing out?
I didn't. I went and ate at his favorite drive-in. Though I talked to the waiter, who was really excited about him coming back, and he brought me a banana shake, which is LeBron's shake. So that's as close as I got to that.
that's exhilarating. It was good.
It was fantastic. Yeah.
So you would recommend Cleveland as a vacation? Shake.
Oh, I would go.
As a vacation destination. Honeymoon spot.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I would definitely bachelor party. I would go there for that.
Really?
Why you trash on Cleveland so much, man?
I don't know. It was easy. It's easy to do. Cleveland, Detroit. It's easy to do.
Yeah, it's been getting it for a while, but I'm a Cleveland fan.
All right. Well,
Detroit's not bad either, man. There's some good places in Detroit.
Oh, Comerica's great too.
Yeah, Comerica's amazing. It is brilliant ballpark.
You know what? You guys are great. Thanks for being here.
Thanks,
Ben. Yeah, anytime.
Dan Robson and Arden Zwelling, Sportsnet Magazine Live.